In today's episode, we will chat about the new Department of Labor's independent contractor role. Let's go. Hello, my name is Michelle Brown, and I love all things business, church finances, and books. In this podcast, we're going to learn the ins and outs of church finances, minister taxes, and how to run a church finance office while keeping Jesus at the center of everything you do. So grab your notebook and pen, my friend, and let's get ready to learn something cool today. Hello, friend, and welcome to episode 60. Oh my gosh, can you believe it? Episode 60 of the Bookkeeping with a Purpose podcast. This is also 1 year ago today is when I released the trailer for the show. So we've been doing this for a whole year. So if you have been with me since the beginning, thank you so much for hanging out with me for the last year. And if you've joined anytime during the year, I'm tickled pink to have you here as well. So as you know, I believe that note takers are history makers, and there's always something you can take notes on. So let's get started. But first, here is today's quote. It's by Craig Groeschel in his new book, Think Ahead, which you have got to read. It's phenomenal. Craig says, "The quality of decisions determines the quality of our lives." And that is so true. That's worth repeating. The quality of our decisions determines the quality of our lives. Now, on to today's topic. Disclaimer, the Department of Labor, which I'll refer to as the DOL, and the Internal Revenue Service use different criteria for determining whether a worker is an employee or an independent contractor, and the criteria serves different purposes. The DOL's criteria are primarily used for determining eligibility for wage and hourly protections under the Fair Labor Standards Act, or the FLSA. We talked about that back in episode 57, just a couple weeks ago, while the IRS's 20-factor control test is used for tax purposes. Okay, so if you listen to episode 57, you do know that the FLSA does apply to your church. So on January 29th of this year, the DOL unveiled its final rule, which fundamentally alters how businesses or organizations, including churches, determines whether a worker is an employee or an independent contractor. And this is a huge topic of discussion with a lot of clients and a lot of consultations that I do. And churches, unfortunately, a lot of times they're doing this wrong. They think that they can just pay everybody as an independent contractor, issue them a 1099, and go on. Okay. Effective March 11th, which is next week, okay, March 11th, 2024, this rule, new rule by the DOL, is going to replace the 2021 independent contractor rule that was issued under former President Trump's administration. And it introduces a 6-factor test to evaluate worker classification. But what exactly are these 6 factors, and how do they impact churches and workers alike? Let's break it down. You ready? All right. So factor number one, this focuses on the opportunity for profit or loss depending on what they say call managerial skill. This means you need to be looking at the following. Okay. Number one, the worker's ability to negotiate pay. All right. Does the church determine what the hourly pay scale is, or does the individual generally will do a per project? Okay. Number two, can they accept or decline jobs? Okay. Most employees I know don't get to pick and choose what jobs they will do and what they won't. Number three, choose the order of the jobs or the time they will perform them. Most employees, 9 to 5, 8 to 12, whatever your schedule is. Okay. Versus choosing, well, 8 o'clock tonight is when I'll get around to this. All right. Number four, engage in marketing efforts to expand or grow their business. Number five, make business decisions like hiring others or purchasing equipment or renting space. And number six, if no opportunity exists to generate a profit or suffer a loss, then the first factor suggests that the worker is an employee. Okay, so I'm going to review those 6 again real quick, because these are not the 6-factor test. These are just 6 points that you need to look at for factor one, which is the opportunity for profit or loss. Number one, their ability to negotiate pay. Number two, can they accept or decline jobs? Number three, can they choose the order of the jobs or the time they will perform them? Number four, do they engage in marketing efforts to expand or grow their business? Number 5, do they make business decisions like hiring others or purchasing equipment or renting space? And number 6, if there's no opportunity to generate a profit or suffer a loss, then the first factor suggests that the worker is an employee. All right, which is, if you think about it, people, that's going to be just about everybody that works in your church. All right, but we're going to move on to number 2, factor number 2. This examines investments made by both the worker and the employer, emphasizing investments of a capital or entrepreneurial nature that support independent business operations. Okay, so basically, let's simplify this. This factor looks at whether the worker is making investments like a business owner would. If a worker is spending money on tools, on equipment, or other things they need for their job, it doesn't automatically mean that they're an independent contractor, but if their investments are more like those of the business owner, like expanding their services, cutting costs, or reaching more customers, it suggests that they're working independently. It's also important to compare the worker's investments with those of the employer to see if they're similar or even if on a smaller scale. This helps to determine if the worker is operating independently, which would mean they're likely an independent contractor. Okay, so are they purchasing out of their own pocket their own office supplies, their own office equipment, their own books, their own computer, their whatever. And I'm not talking about are they being reimbursed for these expenses, okay? But are they purchasing themselves out of their pocket and using it as a business expense? Okay, factor number 3. This factor assesses the degree of permanence in the work relationship, distinguishing between indefinite, continuous arrangements favoring employee status and project-based, non-exclusive arrangements indicative of independent contractor status. Don't you just love the way they word this stuff with these long words? It reminds me of, I'm going to digress for a second. Every time I hear the word long words, it takes me back to Twas the Night Before Christmas. And when they figure out who wrote the mean, nasty letter to Santa Claus. Anyways, okay. So factor number 3, this factor looks at how long and how steady the work relationship is. All right. If the worker's job doesn't have a definite end date, it keeps going, or they only work for one employer, it's more likely they're an employee, just like your pastor. All right. But if the job has a clear end date, it is not the only job they have, or they work on specific projects, they're more likely an independent contractor. Think of a pulpit supply. Okay, your pastor's out, he's going on a mission trip for 3 or 4 weeks. You've got someone coming in to fill the spot for those 3 or 4 weeks. They're an independent contractor. You've got someone to come in to preach a week-long revival. That individual comes in, it's for a set time. They're an independent contractor. All right, your pastor, you expect him to be there from here till Jesus calls him somewhere else or calls him home. Okay. He's going to be an employee. So even if the work is only for certain times, like during a season, it doesn't automatically mean they're an independent contractor. It also depends on whether the job's lack of permanence is because of how the church works or because the worker is running their own business. All right. So again, unfortunately, anything to do with our government, it is what it is. Nothing is always black and white, but this is as clear as I can make it and as they can make it. Okay. So factor number four, this delves into the nature and degree of control exerted by the potential employer over the worker's performance, including factors like schedule setting, supervision, and limitations on working for other entities. This looks at how much the employer controls the work and the business side of things. This one comes into conversations a lot with potential clients and consultations. It includes things like whether the employer decides when the worker should work, watches how the work is done, or stops the worker from working for other people. Using the example of a minister, okay, does the church have required office hours? Are there services that they need to preach? Do they need to be available for visitations, for funerals, for business meetings, for staff meetings, for anything like that? Are there evaluations performed? Which if you are not performing at least annual or bi-yearly, every 2 years, whatever that correct word is, if you're not doing evaluations on your senior staff, you need to be doing that, Okay. And we may do a podcast on how to do those. But anyways, are you doing evaluations on your employees or on your staff? Come Sunday morning, do you expect them to be there to deliver a sermon? And not only to deliver the sermon, but to deliver a sermon that is in line with your particular denomination's theology? I would say so. Otherwise, he doesn't need to be preaching from the pulpit. Okay? That means that you do have a degree of control exerted over him. So your pastors are employees. They are not independent contractors. Number five. Factor number five evaluates the extent to which the work is performed. Is it integral to the potential employer's business, determining employee status when the work is critical and independent contractor when it is what they call peripheral, whatever that is. Okay. Layman's terms. This factor looks at how important the worker's job is to the church overall. It doesn't focus on whether the specific worker is important, but rather if the type of work they do is essential to the church. I would say for ministers, yeah. Having somebody up there preaching the word of God, sharing the gospel, that's quite important to the church. Otherwise, why does your church exist? Just saying. So if the work is really important and central to what the church does, it's more likely the worker is an employee. But if the work isn't as crucial to the main part of the church, the worker is more likely an independent contractor. Example, in some denominations, music is vitally integral to the church services, and the musicians are actually very well paid. These musicians are employees, as most musicians are. Why are they employees? Because they're usually told when to be there, what music to play. They got to make sure they're wearing appropriate attire. Okay, you don't want somebody coming in on Sunday morning and leading worship service with a Megadeth t-shirt, black blue jeans with holes in them, holes in their tennis shoes. Okay, you expect, you have expectations of them that makes them employees. All right. You may not be able to say, okay, and well, I guess you could if, depending on your church's preference, you may want them in suits. You may want them to be more casual, but, generally you give them some leeway, but that's the same thing with your pastor. Your pastor generally is going to determine what sermon series he's going to preach, but the church still maintains control of, okay, this sermon series is great, but if you're, Calvinistic, you're probably not going to let them, preach Arminianism, or if you're Baptist, you're probably not going to have somebody up there preaching Catholicism. Okay, so there's a degree of control, people. All right, and then finally, number six, considers the worker's skill and initiative, highlighting the use of specialized skills and business-like initiative as indicators of the independent contractor status. Again, to simplify this, this factor looks at whether the worker has special skills and takes initiative like a business owner. If the worker doesn't need special skills or relies on training from the employer, they're more likely an employee. But just having special skills doesn't mean they're automatically an independent contractor, because both employees and contractors can have skills. I hope so. If you're hiring somebody, hopefully they have the skills to do the job you've hired them to do. So what matters is how the worker uses those skills along with taking business-like initiative. If they use their skills independently to get the job done, they're likely an independent contractor. For this example, I'm going to use myself. All right. So I served on a church staff for a little bit over 5 years. I was the director of education and finance. Okay. I was an employee. I had set hours that I had to be there. There were tasks that I was to do by certain dates while I was there. They, they definitely said, this is appropriate attire. This would not be appropriate attire. They even would say, you need to watch what you put on social media because you represent the church, yada, yada, yada. Okay. Absolutely. 100% employee. Now that I have opened my business, Hallmark Tax Solutions, I am no longer an employee. I am an independent contractor because I serve several churches through my business. I set my hours. I set my pay. I definitely buy all my supplies and my subscriptions and my dues and my equipment and my continuing education. I don't rely on any of my clients to provide that for me. Okay. I provide them a service. So that's, I think, a wonderful explanation of the difference for factor number six, the worker skill and initiative, and whether or not you're working in a business-like thing. So even if you say, well, what if I just started my business and I only have one client? It doesn't matter. You're still an independent contractor unless you're doing things the way they want, using their equipment during certain hours. You know, they can tell you what you can and can't do, and they have more control over you. So, all right. So it's crucial to note that this rule, this new DOL rule that goes into effect on March 11th, does not adopt the ABC test used in certain states like California and Massachusetts. Instead, it provides clarity specifically under the FLSA, leaving state-level classifications untouched. So as with anything, the federal government has their rules, but you've also got to abide by your state DOL, your Department of Labor rules, and you need to make sure you're in line with that. So while the Department of Labor aims for greater consistency and clarity, this shift could potentially lead to increased litigation as businesses navigate the new criteria for worker classification. So honestly, people, here's the bottom line. Unless someone is clearly running a business, just save yourself the potential trouble and make them an employee. Seriously, I would always rather err on the safe side than do something on the wrong side and it costs me a whole lot more money. All right. So as we navigate these changes, it's essential for churches to stay informed and always consult your legal experts to ensure compliance with evolving labor laws. OK, I am not a legal expert. OK, I know taxes, but I do get asked a lot about employees versus independent contractors, because, again, the taxes are different. All right. So that is going to wrap up another episode, my friend. I pray that the information provided helps you to know just what's currently going on in the labor world, as nothing stays the same. So we'll probably do an update at another point. But until next time, my friend, let's all strive to make an impact and not just an income. Remember to take care and always look your best, do your best, and be your best. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thanks again for listening to today's episode. If you learned something new or were inspired in any way, please do me a huge omongo favor and leave me a fantastic 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people to find the show. And then share this episode with someone who you think it could help. Until next time, my friend, be blessed.